It's a gritty New York crime drama about kids inducted into a sinister gang the cops are powerless to stop. At its core, it's a sad reflection of the ravages of both the drug wars and Reagan-era economic policies on urban youth and spaces. Academy Award winner Sam Rockwell in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined here by two small birds compelled to sew a dress. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
I didn't know you could do that. And Robin Hitchcock.
My name is a bird, so I can't make bird call sounds, but I still feel like I get some points.
Caw, caw, caw.
Just tweet, 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 tweet. Your name is a bird and you're tweeting more than anyone I know.
Right? Oh my goodness. I'm glad you caught that Sam Rockwell thing.
I truly thought I was losing my mind.
I was like, is that Sam Rockwell?
I rewound because I was like, that can't be Sam Rockwell.
And Dan was like, is he going to dance in this?
No, he hands out cigarettes and then turns on Shredder, like, basically just from Casey Jones going, come on! That's all it takes.
Not a lot of loyalty in that island of misfits.
Before we get into it, referencing Enchanted, 42nd overall on our chart, 67 and a third. The only thing notable about that result at all is that that is like our default answer, which is weird because we're three different people taking an average. But seven of our movies are within 1 point of each other right there. National Treasure at 67 and two thirds, then Sneakers, Talladega Nights, and Enchanted are all 67 and one third. Then The Magnificent Seven remake, Back to School, and Teachers all at an even 67.
Wow. So we've definitely got a thing going here. There's definitely some sort of math and or science happening in our brains where this is concerned.
And the weird thing about that is none of those have anything to do with one another.
No.
That, like, I guess Talladega Nights and Back to School are in the same, you know, extended family. But
right.
Then it's an adventure movie, a heist drama, a Disney fantasy, a Western, and a grown-up drama. It's like, yeah, when we don't know, we give you two-thirds. There you are.
It's like, hey, it's a movie, and I'm sure you said some stuff that you wanted to say, but not necessarily in my wheelhouse.
Well, let's see if that is the landing place for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I looked at my Facebook memories today. And exactly 1 year ago today, as we're recording this, we dropped our last Turtles episode.
Are you serious?
Which was also an episode immediately after a bingo win, because I listened to it this morning on 2x speed, which was very interesting. Because I wanted to not avoid repeating ourselves as much as possible. Yeah.
Smart.
Weird stuff.
That's really spooky.
I think the avoiding repeating ourselves is that to establish that we all know how all three of us feel about the Turtles. We do not need to go through our turtle history this time around. We did it a year ago. Go back and listen to that one.
Yeah. And it's exactly what you would think. Sean was a six-year-old boy when this happened, or a five-year-old boy when this happened, so he loves the Turtles. Robin was a six-year-old girl, and so she has complicated gender rage feelings about the Turtles. And Camila was a full-on teenager, and therefore could not care less.
I don't think I was when this movie came out, I was like somewhere, it was either eighth grade or freshman year of high school.
That's a full-on teenager.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't feel like it.
That's definitely too old to care about the Turtles.
This is a true statement.
Yeah.
I don't even know what circumstances was that. I guess it was probably, I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater. But
interesting.
But it was probably one of those things like with my younger cousins, something, because I remember them being really into it. Or also this was the only thing that was safe that I could, my family could go see out at the time or something like that. I don't know.
Well, let me tell you what it's about. I forgot to prepare, or rather I sat down like I'm going to write a recap and then was on the phone and I didn't. So let's see how it goes. It's my turn for the 60-second recap, and somebody time me and say go.
Go.
So it's the late 80s New York, gritty, trash bags blowing through the street, people mumbling a lot. A plucky yet overly confrontational reporter, April O'Neill, is getting in the police chief's face because she thinks it's tied to the Foot Clan, which are an order, a new version of an order of Japanese bad guys, whatever. Also, there are turtles. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are nearing the end of their training. They're doing well. Raphael is being a dick because that's apparently all that happens in any of these movies. But they're mostly getting along. They find the reporter April O'Neill. Raphael's out on one of his many excursions, not even disguised. When he runs across April being mugged, they bring her home. They explain that they're turtles. Splinter gives some of his backstory. Then Splinter gets kidnapped because reasons. I think the human subplot saw where they went. I don't know. The point is, Splinter's kidnapped. They go to a farm. They meet Casey Jones. He's Han Solo with bad hair. He hits things with hockey sticks. They hang out on a farm trying to wait, waiting for Raphael to get better. This part is oddly artsy. And then they go back because they think Splinter is dead because they connected to him with mind magic somehow. He wasn't dead. They went back. They rescued some of the lost boys, but not lost boys, and eventually beat up Shredder enough until, and then Casey Jones crushes his head in a garbage compactor in a shocking moment for this movie. April and Casey get together and it wasn't believable. The end.
Well, that was well over a minute and a half. I let you go Probably. That long because I truly needed the recap. I watched this movie last night, like less than 12 hours ago.
Same.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what happened in this
movie? Mind you, there was a lot of me leaving the room for snacks and not pausing it, things like that.
I put my phone down because I was like, oh, I'm not, like, it is impossible to pay attention to this with my phone in my hand. So it's like, my phone is down, I'm gonna watch it, and I still would like find my mind wandering.
Like, I wonder what material they use for
this. I like this one, but I have demographic and nostalgic reasons to do so.
Listen, there are things to like about this movie,
such as
before we go into the facts and everything, like, my overall reaction is like, the turtles look really good, and I can't tell, like, is that nostalgia for me? Like, did I just 100% like, kind of what we're talking about with E.T. like, when I was a child, I 100% accepted the reality of E.T. and then, but that's like iconic, perfect puppetry. Like, I don't think of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as iconic puppetry, and yet I was like, wow, their faces do a lot.
Yeah. Was this it's like puppets and people. It was animatronics and people in suits, or
right? It's people in suits, and then the suit heads have animatronics inside of them,
right?
And someone
it's Jim
else,
Henson, right?
This is the last feature that Jim Henson was involved with.
Oh wow!
Although I think his son was more direct, more day to day involved. But yeah, it's all of the turtles are at least three people. A work in the face guy, a guy in the suit, and a voice. Except Raphael. His name is Josh Pay or Pace.
Pais.
And he is both the guy in the suit and the voice. Good for him.
And wasn't he also the guy in the taxi cab in the beginning?
And the guy in the taxi cab. That's maybe my favorite moment. Because because it, given the New York we know from movies from 1985 to 1992, I'm like, yeah, I think if a big turtle rolled across the cab, the people in it would react for a minute and then figure out where they were going.
All right.
This movie looks so grody.
Oh my God. Everything just looks filthy. Like, I don't know.
Everything's dirty. And then they go to, like, the woods, Did they say where they were? I noticed in the credits that they said they filmed in North Carolina, but like, where were they hiding out?
The closest is April going, this place has been in my family for years, but I haven't been here in a while. That's okay.
Listen, it doesn't look like upstate New York.
No.
I was like, whoa, they went pretty far. But yeah, even when they're in the woods and it's supposed to not look grody anymore, it still looks grody. Everything looks so grody in this movie. I guess they kind of needed to like match the foam of the suits.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, it would just be too jarring to watch them walk into a pristine environment.
Right.
I don't know.
Or maybe that's just what, like,
movies in the 90s.
Tied this into the Reagan era. Like, maybe that's just the vibe that was happening in 1990.
There was a micro movement of family movies where everything is dingy. Like it
like
happened
Super
here.
Mario Brothers.
Mm. Super Mario Brothers, Little Monsters was just before this.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, for some reason, we wanted to throw children in a creepy, dirty warehouse in the late 80s.
Maybe it was just, this was part of the whole psychological torment that children in the 80s went through. It was like, see, you could have it worse. It's like, do what I say.
Except, hang on. The Foot Clan's hideout was the coolest looking place in the world when I was five, and still is now.
That's pretty like, dope.
They have arcade games, they're gambling, people just hand out cartons of cigarettes, everyone's having a good time, there's people rapping. If I'm a kid, I'm like, this is so much better than my life. I don't care if I have to sleep on a box near the big rat that's chained to the wall. Fine. Anyway, let's do Factsy. This will be an abbreviated version since a lot of the overall Turtles facts were covered last year. This, the first Turtles movie, was released March 30th, 1990, the seventh number one movie of the year. Won that weekend with $25.3 million. Nothing was close. The runner-up was the second week of Pretty Woman, $12.4 million. The only new release was Opportunity Knocks, a comedy with Dana Carvey and Robert Loggia.
I recall
means
it.
Nothing to me.
Robert Loggia!
Fifth place, $3.5 million. This movie is a 4-week number one movie in America.
Wow.
Weeks 2, 3, and 4 with 18.8 million, then 14 million, then 9.7 million. Almost went to a fifth week. It fell to second behind Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman was still going strong, but even then it was about $200,000 the difference between the two of them. This is partially a case of not great competition, and the competition that did exist not being for the same audience. The releases during this 4-week reign were like Ernest Goes to Camp, I Love You to Death, Crybaby, John Waters Crybaby, mm-hmm. The Gods Must Be Crazy 2, Miami Blues. There were not. Everyone got out of the way of the Turtles.
Jeez,
and
yeah.
Gave April to them.
That explains why if that would make sense if that I did see it in the theater, because there was absolutely nothing else on that list that my family or I would have seen or have seen.
And especially no children's counter programming. Right. So this spent 12 weeks in the top 10 and made $135.2 million. It is fifth overall for 1990, behind only Home Alone, Ghost, Dances with Wolves, and Pretty Woman. It is the second highest grossing Ninja Turtles movie, behind only the first Michael Bay one in 2014. So even the sequel to that movie, a good 26 years later, made less money than this original Turtles did.
It did make more. Have profited outrageously, right? Like, because a lot of, aside from the very impressive turtle suits, it seems like they made this for around $1.85.
Right. Yeah.
What I saw was $13 million. This had a $13 million budget, obviously, which was almost entirely effects, to the point where they were like, nah, it's too expensive to film in New York. And other than exteriors, it was all in North Carolina. Forgive me if I misquote here, because I didn't include this. I just read it places. This was passed by every major studio. Because something similar, I think the He-Man movie, the Masters of the Universe movie, had bombed. And so the conventional wisdom was, you know, a children's toy and cartoon property will not make money as a big movie.
Right.
So no one wanted to do it until New Line, which was a total independent at the time, were like, fine, we'll give it $13 million and hopefully make a profit. And boy, did they. Speaking of it being independent, for 8 years, this was the highest grossing independent film of all time.
What? Wow.
until the release of The Blair Witch Project in 1999.
Wow.
No film from outside of a major studio had made the $135 million that these turtles pulled in. There were two direct sequels in 91 and 93. Neither of them were successful, but both were number one. As we mentioned last time, every Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie is a number one movie in America. We talked about the turtles in the suits. Yes, that is Corey Feldman voicing Donatello for no clear reason.
He likes to work.
Right. And my dude had bills.
He's like, I got come to my backyard. I'll do a scene for you. That's Corey Feldman.
He says that he only got $1,500 for this, but no.
What? $1,500?
$1,500?
That's what he says. And no, you're lying. That's you're lying so that you feel bad for you and buy more concert tickets today, Corey. I believe that everyone got underpaid because he said much the same thing. He was explaining that, you know, this was seen as something that may or may not make money. They were mainly hoping that it would be a VHS hit. They didn't, right. You know, have a lot of faith in it. You've made more than $1,500.
Yeah.
He's the end credit when the credits roll. He got something. Finally, the director here is Steve Barron, who may or may not have been fired late in the process of making this movie because it was getting so dark and gritty. Josh Pais says, yes, he was fired and other people finished it. It was a weird production. I don't know if you caught one of the editors was since then Oscar winner Sally Menke, huh. Christian Tarantino's big collaborator. This was her first feature.
Wow.
And she, too, no one was getting along with and was asked to leave before the production ended. So she edited some of this movie.
Like, how? Wow. How does this movie... Who looks at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and is like, yeah, I'm going to make this shit dark? Like how did...
The source material... Like, the original comics were like that.
Really?
I don't know. I haven't read them, but that's my understanding from all of the boys my age who I talk to who are like, well, actually, right. And push their glasses up.
Right.
Also, we didn't talk about this last time. There's some controversy about whether or not April O'Neil is black.
Oh, really?
Have you heard this?
Mm-mm. No.
Apparently, the original artist was dating a mixed race woman named April and drew the character to look like her.
Hmm.
Oh, but it was a black and white comic, so...
Correct.
It was ambiguous, yeah.
So then, once it was time to put color involved, they were like, A, white supremacy, B, her last name's O'Neil, she has red hair!
Right.
She was Black Irish. That's what it was.
Yes.
To wrap up, Steve Barron, he did not have much of a feature career. He did make Coneheads a few years later.
I saw that in
but
the theater.
He was a prolific music video director throughout the 80s. This is the man responsible for the golden trio of Take On Me.
That's why Billy I know Jean. The name. That's okay.
Billy Jean and the Dire Straits Money for Nothing early computer animation video and dozens more. So
I mean, that's an iconic trio.
Yeah,
maybe should have stayed there, who's to say. Certainly, you know, he still works, he does TV and stuff, but he was not long for the feature world. So what do you guys think of this movie?
Bored. It is a completely unwatchable film for me, for Camila. It does not work for me in any way, shape, or form. I think the real story is where the turtles go try to track down the kid who lost them, or however they got in their little aquarium or geranium or whatever the fuck you call it. This is how they got in the sewer. Like, that's the story I want to know. I want to know about that kid that, you know, just discarded them.
Right. Wow, are those flashbacks incredible. Like, when they have the actual turtles pawing around in the glowing green liquid, mm-hmm. Was this on the list of movies with glowing green liquid?
Yes,
on Letterboxd? Yep. I, like, had to grab hold of a piece of furniture. I was like, am I watching what I am watching? And the tiny splinter puppet.
Oh, my God.
It's trippy. Like, this stuff, I, like, genuinely... felt like out of sorts watching those scenes.
It was a really weird like sensation to get. Like, it's like I can't articulate it at all, but you're right, it was kind of, I guess trippy is probably the best way, because it's like the way that everything was moving. And then it's like Splinter tells the story again or goes on again. It's like, boy, he sure does like telling this story. Like, this
yes, it happened several times, and every time it happened I felt off kilter.
Which, did anyone watch on HBO Max and saw that clearly the caption writer was, or the blurb writer was paying about as much attention as Camila did, because the plot on the blurb is just incorrect.
I didn't catch that.
What does it
say? Like when a mysterious ninja who was a former student of Splinter's comes back to town, I'm like, none of this is accurate.
What?
Yeah.
Is that the plot of a different Ninja Turtles movie?
It's possible.
Okay.
Nobody cared. Like, no.
As we discuss, you don't really remember what happens in a Ninja Turtles. Like, they're doing okay. Raphael's a jerk to everyone. There's a little rift. And then eventually they all get back together to beat up probably Shredder. That's yeah. all that that's all that I needed to say in the recap.
Yeah. And the only thing that I remembered, like whenever I think about this movie, like before I saw it again, the only thing I remembered is the farm. Like that's, I don't know why, but, and just so we're all clear, that's Elias Koteas and not Christopher Milani.
Two different people, allegedly.
Mm-hmm. There's no way. No, Elias did not age
Jones
well.
He's so sexy.
I'll give him that.
I just, like, there is so much about my type that is just Casey Jones in this movie. Clearly made a difference for me.
Yeah.
The budget that was there did not go to hair, because both Casey and April have questionable choices.
Don't you dare.
April's
Casey's
hair makes
hair is perfect.
They both look like they got a, you know, stylish 80s hairdo 36 hours ago and haven't been to bed yet.
Yes. April's hair is most definitely crunchy.
Okay. Speaking of the farmhouse, one of the things I like had to pause and be like, is this really happening? Was, first of all, I like missed Raphael getting hurt. Like, he like gets a little bump on the noggin. And then April is like, Leonardo has kept a constant vigil. And then they show Raphael upside down in a bathtub. Like, he's just, that's how turtles recover, is they just like rest on their belly in a tub.
That, I guess that must have been when I left the room.
Water in there? Like, what is happening?
I don't know a lot about turtles. And I know much less about Ninja Turtles. So, right.
I wonder how much of this movie is spent up with people dramatically saying the word turtle. Because there's a lot of times when somebody's like, but the turtles. A lot of this movie is people, like, a lot of the core appeal is saying words that sound cool. That's very key to the proceedings.
Yeah, and also a lot of close-ups, like, or at least for Shredder. Yeah, Shredder. At least for Shredder. Like, he had a lot of just, like,
they only show part of his face.
Right. Right. It's like we rarely got a full body shot on that dude. And that was a magnificent costume. So,
that really was a cool costume. I would watch an entire movie of the Turtles playing Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. My favorite thing here is Donatello and Michelangelo are killing time. Any time that's out, when they sing they Taps do. For the Pizza.
5 points for Taps for the Pizza.
But that's, you're right. That's all they do, is they just are just there in the background. Why are they secondary characters in their own movie? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, clearly Raphael and Leonardo are the stars of the group, right, quote unquote, and of the movie. Like, Michelangelo and Donatello, I feel like they're just, are they just like the little brothers that, you know, they just kind of kick them in the background every once in a while?
Yeah, I don't know. Sean, what is the standard? Like, because I remember we talked about, I listened to the episode again this morning. We talked about this last time, how, like, they don't really know what to do with the other characters. And I always remember Donatello being, like, the cool one that people would fight over who got to be Donatello on the playground.
Really?
But Donatello was the nerd, though.
Yeah, he does machines.
What?
He does machines and stuff.
Sean just held up his turtle to the camera.
I have all four Shredder, and I'm ashamed that I can never remember which one is Bebop and which one is Rocksteady.
What are they?
The rhinoceros one.
What are they even?
Yeah. They're Shredder's two big goons in the animated series, and I think they show up in weird ass form by the second live action movie. No, Leonardo's the leader. Raphael is the rebel who's probably secretly the best one, but he's a hothead, so it's a problem. Michelangelo is the burnout, cool kid. And Donatello is the, like, you know, either mechanic or computer whiz or just generally smart guy, depending on what you need that day.
That's right.
And they clearly didn't need him in this particular story.
No, right, because, I mean, they spent all their time in an antique shop in the sewer or on the farm. So there's really no tech for him to fix, I guess.
It's a surprise there aren't more antique store fires. You'd think that would be really easy to make everything go up. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, speaking of fire, nice segue. So we're living in a sewer and we're just open flames all around. I was so upset when Splinter is starting to tell his life fucking story again and he lights a candle. I'm like, oh my God, this whole thing is going to go up. Plus, there's probably still some leftover radioactive sludge somewhere. I don't understand what's happening.
I'm not going to justify my love too much because I think that's obvious.
You don't have to, Sean.
For personal reasons.
The heart wants.
My favorite thing about this movie is the settings. I mean, the Foot Clan's hideout is obviously the best, but I love the farm. The farm always stuck with me. Like, for some reason, seeing that when I was 5 or 6, like, that sequence of the movie really hit me. I think because you're used to seeing the turtles in New York if you're a kid watching the cartoons, and seeing them in this odd, calm, pastoral setting is really great. I like the antique store. I like the sewer. The sewer kind of always looks the same, but I did get a sense of it. And, you know, if you're on a skateboard around sewer tunnels punching people as you go by, that's going to work. That's going to work for me every time. It worked for me in the animated one. I remember that and nothing else about the animated one.
Yeah, I am not going to steal your joy, Sean. I know, like, a lot of the stuff is over the top because a lot of things, they're puppets, essentially, and you can't, there's not a lot of subtle facial movement or acting that can be done. So a lot is over the top, and with, you know, all this this kind of stuff, and, you know, so that was annoying to me, but I understand why it had to happen.
I was impressed with their martial arts choreography while wearing what I assume is 50 pounds of foam.
Yeah.
Like, they were doing better fights than, for example, Steven Seagal in whatever Steven Seagal movie that we watched recently. Like, you know, it's clearly limited, but I was still like, they did what they could do, and I respect that.
It was impressive. I did the being able to move as agile as they were in those suits. I mean, there were a couple things that were kind of clunky, but I mean, shit, like, they're wearing like all this foam and whatever else.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's hot and uncomfortable, and
they're
probably
in North
stinks.
Carolina, like,
probably
yikes.
Stinks terribly in that head.
Oh God. Remember a couple years ago when it was like an actual suit from the film was like for auction and it was like weirdly decayed and very upsetting.
Oh my God. Oh, Sean, you didn't buy that, did you?
Well, here's there's an interesting thing about the speed of it, where apparently they filmed at like 22 or 23 frames per second and then sped it up to normal so that it was imperceptibly covering the limitations of moving in the suits. And that makes me more impressed. That's like, you made it convincing, even though you were messing with the speed of a thing, which is very hard to do.
Right.
Robin, as the April O'Neil correspondent, what's your take on this particular April?
I don't really have strong feelings about it. One of the things I realized while watching this movie is that I clearly watched The Secret of the Ooze a lot more than this. Like, I kept waiting for things to happen that happen in Secret of the Ooze. And there's a different April in that. And that's, like, to me, the iconic live action April. So I don't know if that's just a age quirk or whatever, played more on HBO kind of thing. She's okay. You know, she definitely pulls off the weird sexual tension with a puppet thing.
So messed up.
I was gonna say, like, I watched this movie like 9 months ago because it was playing at the drive-in, and I was like, yes, sure, that's a distraction. I didn't notice it then, but this time when she has them over for pizza And then she shows them out and does the movie thing where you turn around at the door and kind of lean against it. I'm like, she thinking about fucking one of them turtles? Like,
or all of them?
Right. Because she was like, I don't know. It was just, I just hate it.
I wrote down in my notes, she is really chill about all of this.
Right. Like, she like freaks the fuck out for like 5 minutes and then, you know, Splinter gives their backstory and then she's, okay. Got
it. I'm convinced. Let's get some pizza.
All right. So another interesting thing that I, as I saw when I realized that, yes, this was Sam Rockwell, and I started to Google more things about it, is that the dude who plays Splinter is also the guy who used to puppet Elmo on Sesame Street. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Day job, night job, right?
Which, wow.
Maybe Elmo's going to grow up and look like Splinter. Splinter's pretty upsetting at this.
It's so upsetting, especially when he's chained to the wall.
And and like, he looks, because he's like surrounded by like steam at all times in the hideout. And so like, it looks like he is being cooked.
Yeah. And I guess I started to get flashbacks of like my murderous gerbils that I used to have.
You'd think that he wouldn't look cuter when he was just a rat, but he definitely did. When it was just a little rat that moved very slightly, you're like, well, that's adorable.
Right. Oh, look at him doing ninja moves. Aw.
God, I love those flashbacks.
Oh, see, that's where they lose me. I buy the radioactive ooze turning creatures into humanoids. Fine. A non-mutant rat watched...
Right.
His bipedal master practice and now is a ninja? No.
Right.
No.
Like, too far, guys. No. Now it's unbelievable. I'm not going to. I can't rock with you on this one. Yeah, I found myself overthinking that, like, really too much as I was watching this. There were a lot of things that I was just, like, overthinking and I hate it.
I was going to say, I was surprised at the end when he made a joke and then said, I made a funny. I would really peg that particular, in air quotes, joke to like 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it comes and goes in waves. I guess we're ready for a new round of I Made a Funny.
Hey, arcade's opening back up. You can paint that on the walls. Quote, I Made a Funny, Arcade Comedy Theater. I would like to know, because we spent more than enough time on several previous episodes discussing the Turtles album and concert tour. But What a Bop, Turtle Power by Partners in Crime playing over the credits.
Are you?
I love that song.
Okay, to me, that sounds like someone recorded a demo to be like, hey, go make a song that sounds like this, but like, you know, put your back into it when you actually record it. Like, it very much was like a concept art song.
Pizza's the food that's sure to please. These ninjas are into pepperoni and cheese.
Like, he sounds tired. Like, he's does. Like, oh, we gotta get out of here. We're running out of studio time. Okay, T-U-R-T-L-E, power.
What was the style at the time? That's how it sounded every time out.
For a second, I thought it was Digital Underground, and I refused to, like, look into it, because he kind of sounded like Humpty. And so, you know, but I shut it off, and I was like, you know, I would really like to keep any fond memories I have of Shock G and Humpty and Digital Underground, so I'm not going to look this up. I don't want to know.
Listen, I genuinely think the Vanilla Ice song from Secret of Views is a better song than whatever was happening here.
That was, yes, oh. I agree.
Because it is. Yeah, okay. I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that I was sitting there going, you know, I don't think they play the cartoon theme song in this movie, and that's a shame. And then Turtle Power came on over the credits, and I'm like, oh, but this is fine, too. Turtle Power.
The second song they play was so badly mixed that I thought it was played next door.
By the way, I recommend following at @wiki_TMNT on Twitter. It is just an account that tweets out Wikipedia article titles that can be sung to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme song. Like Treasure Island, San Francisco, Fashion Outlets of Chicago.
Fashion Henry Outlets Carroll. Of Chicago.
Right, yeah. NASA open source agreement. It every day there's a new one. It's a delight. Well, having covered the Turtles now very extensively, I think we can get ahead to rate it. I investigated my nostalgia and I thought, what is the maximum possible score I feel is acceptable to give this movie, knowing that I will never not be biased? And I landed on 70. This gets a 7. I didn't look up what I've been giving recently. It just better than Enchanted. Yes, I agree that it is better than Enchanted. I think that is true. Better than Footloose. Much better than Footloose. So I am all in, and I think people should go back and revisit it. Certainly more than any of the other Turtle movies. So a 70 from me. And now, for a much lower score, Camila.
Now, mind you, as we have been sitting here and talking about it, I added 3 points to the score that I originally gave it. 30 is what I've landed on.
Okay, well, just as for context, the animated one we did a year ago, you gave an 11.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because I just did this, like, I gave it a 27 yesterday off the top of my head. I didn't look at anything that I had rated in the past. I was like, no, this feels right. But you guys talked me into giving it 3 more points.
My gut check score was a 33, but then I am giving it the 5 bonus points for humming taps to a moldy pizza. And so that brings me up to 38, which means I'm giving this a lower score than I gave the animated movie.
Really?
Wow. Yes. The animated movie, as you will recall, had some really cool imagery going for it.
Yeah, I do remember you.
I mean, it was ugly as hell, but they put the imaginary camera in really cool places.
Yeah, but in this one, Casey and April are fighting, and then Donatello says, it's kind of like moonlighting, and I laugh out loud.
Yes, I'm sure that you are, like, the exact right person for that joke. You now know that moonlighting exists, but you're still young enough that you are willing to laugh, because it is hard to imagine parents in 1990 taking their kids to this movie and reacting to that pandering with anything other than...
Mm. 46. 46 is the overall score. I'm heartbroken, but you know, I'll move on. I will recover somehow. What did we land on for the other one, the animated one?
35.33.
Okay, so we agree that this is better, except for Robin. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm not hurt. I have my little toys to comfort me. Exactly. To the bingo card. We've got a brand new bingo card, and I don't know if anything applies.
I don't.
Open field? They were in a field training.
Yeah.
I would give it the field.
That counts.
Yeah, do we want to go through some of our new squares, Camila?
A couple of the new ones that we have added are firefighters, drag, a character's in drag, a quote of just like in the movie. So like when a character, you know, sees something happen, is like, oh, this is a trope, blah, 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 just like in the movies or blah, blah, blah. And, a sequel where the first one didn't make number one in the box office. Because
which happens a surprising amount.
Yes, because those surprise smash hits like Scream and Karate Kid, which I am forever upset I will never get to do for this show, because they did not make it to number one, but their you know, babies did. And a character gets caught in a lie. That's a and surveillance video. That's a new one. So this time around we've got open field.
Yeah, I know that the antique store burned down, but I don't think we were there when the firefighters showed up.
No,
I don't remember. So, well, still, because that's on my Tony Goldwyn row. If a babysitter says just like in the movies next week, I will instantly win. That means it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What's everybody watching?
I watched this Netflix animated movie called Vivo, where Lin-Manuel Miranda...
Yes.
I always screw up his name. I think he wrote it, but he wrote a lot of the music for it, and he plays a monkey, and it's it starts off in Cuba and then it goes on to Miami, and it's like it's surrounding a Cuban family, and I'm going to give you guys a spoiler because I needed it, because my sister came to me with this movie and was all super hype about how much she loved it and blah, blah, blah. And so I watch it. And so here's a spoiler for Vivo. So the little old man that you're going to fall in love with in the first 10 minutes of the movie dies. Mm-hmm. So I needed that spoiler. I had to shut it off for a couple days before I could go back to it.
You needed to get your tears out, yes, brace yourself.
Because I'm still damaged from Up. Like, it's still... not okay. So I am full on for spoilers about animated films where the character dies. Like, I need, mm-hmm, to know that before I get involved. But yeah, this movie was very cute. Like, the monkey the monkey and the old man perform in the streets, and that's what their thing is. And so the old man had a lost love who's in Miami, and he wrote a song for her like 50 years ago, and he wants to go give it to her. He dies, and then, you know, it's up to the monkey to go get her, give it to her. And
this sounds adorable.
It is, and he pairs up with like the old guy's niece, who's probably like 12 or 13 or something like that, and they've got some really good songs. And like the one song that my favorite is a little girl sings about going to the beat of her own drum, and I think Missy Elliott produced the song, so it's a really good song. I would highly suggest to watch it. It's on Netflix. Vivo.
I haven't watched any new movies. I watched two seasons of Angela Bassett's TV show 911.
Yes, they don't deserve her.
Watched a show like that, like a network procedural, in a really long time, and I forgot how enjoyable that can be and how it can really hit the sweet spot of the amount you have to pay attention,
right?
And I get squeamish about gory things, and people get in, like, so much of that show is like, you know, this daily task you do, you could become horribly injured if something goes slightly wrong,
right?
And I'll just straight up fast forward through the gruesome injuries but still know what's going on at the end of the episode. Like, yes,
yeah,
it's, yes,
like each episode is like Final Destination.
It really is. And anyway, Angela Bassett, she's just the best who ever did it. She's just, yeah, so great. And I love that she is making money and not working very hard. And I wish that she were making movies alongside of this as well, but
right,
that she's actually in, unlike that goddamn
milkshake thing.
But yeah, this has truly been hitting the sweet spot for me. Movies wise, I rewatched Magnolia, which I had not seen since 1999, and holds up for me to my utter astonishment. It was fun to watch it with Colin, also, like, knowing that he doesn't know what's gonna happen. But I tried very hard not to do the thing of like watching him watch when they break out into song and the frogs and all that stuff. But I can't believe that movie worked for me when I wasn't 17.
Yeah, that feels like a Garden State. That feels like a, right? You needed the then feelings.
I think that maybe if I saw it now, it wouldn't work for me. I don't know. I sat through 3 whole hours of it again, enjoying it.
That's the thing. It is very tough to commit to a rewatch of a 3-hour movie.
Yeah. Right. Like, that, you know, is probably not as good as you think it is.
Right.
Like, hey, you know what's good? And 92 minutes? Anything. I'll watch that. So I saw new stuff last week before I went on vacation, and I feel like all of it has already just whooshed right out of everybody's mind. The Night House is really good. The Rebecca Hall head trippy type horror movie. It's very good. It is infinitely more dark than I was expecting.
Hmm.
This is the minefield with like horror being very mainstream right now, that in a trailer they always look like the same general kind of a tone of a project, and in practice that might mean A Quiet Place Part 2, or it might mean Hereditary. You kind of don't know how hardcore you're going until you show up.
Oh, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, because they're all, every trailer and commercial for a horror movie getting a big release is like weird visuals, some shocks, jump scare type things, and an actor you've seen before. And that could mean...
Right. This is literally every 3 songs on Spotify I hear Rebecca Hall say, do you believe in ghosts?
It's very good. It's about like death, self-harm, and intimate existential dread. It's like death is everywhere, and it might be, and I feel you're going to blink out of existence when it happens. It's like, whoa, I just wanted popcorn and to go, ooh, like, but it's scary and it's good. Just know what you're getting into. Right. I saw the Maggie Q action movie, The Protégé. It's fine. Michael Keaton and Maggie Q have stunning sexual chemistry. Ooh. That's really fun.
Really?
Michael Keaton with anybody, really. But I am into it.
You would not. And then they start talking and you're like, I see. You know, it's kind of every action movie with better actors and better dresses. You know, if you feel like it, sure.
I do feel like it now.
Yeah. Hey, lots of almost completely empty theaters across America right now. You could catch a matinee with one to half of another human being.
Yeah. Did you see Candyman yet?
No, I'm gonna go on Thursday night.
Are you gonna go, Camila?
No.
No, you're not ready.
No, that's not gonna be the reason. Like it's close, but
yeah. I don't know if I will ever. Candyman seems way, way, way too scary for me.
Like I just feel like my level of anxiety cannot take like with COVID and Candyman right. in the movie theater for the first time. I won't survive. Like
that. Yeah, that sounds very dangerous for your blood pressure.
Right? Exactly. I'm gonna be up here. I'm starting off at 10, like just walking in the door.
If you look into the mirror and say Delta variant 5 times. Yeah, I know. I mean, Robin, did you only go to the movies once?
I've only gone once, and I don't really feel comfortable going right now. I don't know. This is a whole other podcast, but
yeah,
I have to do live theater stuff for my job, and I know everyone there is vaccinated and we have all our safety protocols in place, but like if I need to limit my risk to the things that support my livelihood.
I mean, I've been very like, you know, we're vaccinated, the vaccines work, the vaccines make it, you know, if you do catch it, it's mild. And that's why I still went to Vegas last week.
Right.
I'm vaccinated and I will wear a mask the whole time and it's going to be fine. And yeah, I mean, now I'm like, oh, fuck, should I have done that? Like, because I feel a little crappy, but which is definitely a result of the fact that I took a test as a precaution yesterday.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Don't have results back yet.
Yeah.
So I'm like, brain, you're going to make me feel sick until the moment I get that negative test.
Right.
But
it could also just be the did you take, I'm assuming you flew, so it could just be like the normal, you know,
it could be an airline bug, it could be the fact that I'm going from like a arid climate with no plants into a humid stew of pollen,
right?
Like that right. be what it actually is. So far from the point of our podcast. It is so true that 100 degrees in the desert feels like 81 degrees in
it's true.
Wow.
I was more there was a couple of times, because everything in Las Vegas costs three times as much as it should. There was a few times when I was like, yeah, I'm a mile and a half from where I want to go, but I've paid for six $30 lifts today. I'm walking. And I would walk 20 to 30 minutes in 100 degree heat and be like, I'm a little warm. Mm-hmm. And here, if I'm walking the dog and it's 82, I'm like, I'm dying.
Right. I walked around my house to my car to get some Diet Coke out of my trunk and came back just drenched.
I don't know if this counts as You Can't Handle the Truth because I haven't watched the show yet, but has anyone watched this show, Ghost Adventures? It's been on forever.
No.
Travel. And there's a destination in Las Vegas called Zach Baggins' Haunted Mansion. Zach Baggins is the hilariously named guy from Ghost Adventures. And a lot of people are like, he demeans the field of paranormal research. And I'm like, guys, come on.
The what?
Let's not, you know.
Easy now. Easy.
Because it's a show. Because it's him going, this box is cursed. And then saying, when I touched it, I felt cold. Like, it's a show. It's fine. It's a show. But he does have, I recommend you go if you like spooky shit. Because he has the most, he has stuff of Ted Bundy's, stuff of Charles Manson's. I leaned my head into the van where Kevorkian helped everyone die. Like, yikes. He has all of this. He has stuff that was taken out of Bonnie and Clyde's car after they got shot up. All of this incredibly incredibly, like, how do you own this type artifacts in addition to this doll is cursed, this thing is cursed. One of the first things you do on the RIP tour is go into a small room filled with dolls people think are cursed, and you're just in a closet with them all staring at you. And I got dizzy and had to leave because that's terrifying.
Yeah, no thank you.
But I got Mary Beth like a skull in the gift shop, like a fancy little souvenir skull. And she's like, did you bring me a thing from the cursed place?
No.
Don't let that in the house. Like, it's a souvenir skull.
Like, she's if you like, don't bury you that thing in the backyard.
In the basement? Yes, but still.
It's like, if you don't bury that thing in the backyard and pour some salt on it, like, I will. Stop fucking around, Sean.
Yes, for anyone listening, I don't want any cursed presents.
Keep it to yourself.
It is the thought that counts.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm not going to do is fuck around and find out. It's not. Y'all keep playing and playing while talking about that, you know, that candy. The
did
candy
you
gentleman.
They, like, you can watch a trailer yes. if you say Candyman five times in your phone. Who?
I am never going to see that trailer. Like, it's just
right?
like people.
Yeah. Come on.
Stop playing. Like, literally.
I will travel during a pandemic. I will not take Candyman five times.
That's exactly, yes. I will get my ass on a plane without a mask before I say that five times in the mirror. It's not going to happen.
I will put my hand in a jar of COVID.
Well, all of that said, and if anyone's actually watched that show, tell me, because now I'm kind of interested, because I spent 3 hours among this guy's spooky shit. I think it's going to be one of those shows where, like, they tell you about a place, and they're like, you won't believe what we found. Cut to commercial, and then it's just a fucking door opening, you know. But still. Well, let's not draw a movie.
Oh,
Robin,
yeah.
Last week, hit her second bingo in a calendar year. What does that mean? That means that she gets to select the movie. The only time this has happened so far, Camila narrowed down the choices and then had her young daughter pick one out of a hat. It was Seven, because all toddlers love decapitating Gwyneth Paltrow. Sorry, spoilers. Robin, what was your methodology?
Okay, so originally, I think I mentioned last week, I was like, am I going to rule out everything that I've brought with me to a movie draft before? And ultimately, Sean and Camila were like, yeah, it's more fun. Shake it up, right? So anything I had previously suggested was off the table, which took out Titanic, which took out Terminator 2, a couple of things that I definitely hope we get to do an episode about someday. And then I started making a short list of movies that I haven't put up yet. And I just kept returning back to this one particular movie. And so I didn't even have to go to a Sweet Baby to pull a name out of a hat because aww. I just had a solid winner. Now, I do have to disclose that part of what made me say, like, that's it, it's good, I'm doing it, is that I thought at the time it was streaming for free. Oh. It is not. I am going to Venmo both of you $5 because I don't want you to resent having to pay for this movie. Because it's terrible.
Oh, yeah, Venmo me $5, Robin.
I will. I have picked 2005's Sahara.
With Steve Zahn and Matthew McConaughey?
Yes, correct.
Yeah,
not where $5. I thought this was going.
Everybody has one of those movies that is not good, and yet you love it.
You love
right?
it.
And I love this movie.
I can't
it is a
wait.
Comfort food movie for me. And I am going to let you guys tell me for a solid hour what an idiot I am and how terrible it is. But not because you resent spending $5 on it.
Yeah, that helps. I mean, yeah. Me watching it for free essentially helps to bring it back to a neutral.
Yep. So that's my pick. And I may live to regret it.
The second tier of the cast list here is wild because after the stars, you get to William H. Macy, Rainn Wilson, and Delroy Lindo.
Delroy Lindo? I love
him.
Yeah,
Delroy Lindo's awesome at this.
Okay, great. That's plus 10 points right there. We're starting off good.
My immediate reaction is I have no idea whether or not I've seen this. Would I remember it if I had?
I don't know. I know that I saw it in the Dollar Theater back when it came out, and I remember leaving being like A+.
The Dollar Theater. God, I missed that place.
Me too.
I think I'm confusing it with Jumper in a similar posters scenario.
Yeah.
I know I saw Jumper and Hidalgo. In my mind, Jumper, Hidalgo, and Sahara are the same thing, despite them having three wildly different plots.
Have the Sahara behind the poster?
Yeah, probably. No, I'm excited. I am confused whenever any of us willingly wants to watch a movie made after 1999. Because, like, so much of the joy of this is, like, going back.
Right.
But well, 2005 is 16 years ago.
It's like, if I pick a movie that is genuinely good, like, there might not be that much for us to talk about.
Right.
Or if it's a movie that is genuinely good and one of you don't like it, like when we did Sneakers, I felt bad that you guys didn't like this movie that I was like, sure you would like. So it's a lot lower stakes to be like, here's a piece of garbage that I love.
Well, if I hit that bingo, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare coming right up for that exact reason. Probably not, but maybe. It's a wild one. Tom Arnold and Roseanne cameo as an angry couple for no reason.
Is it a cameo, or did they just happen to be walking past set?
They're like, hey, you guys.
They just walked.
What's going on with you?
An angry couple.
What was close, Robin? Was there anything else? Is there a runners-up that you were close to declaring?
Most of the other runners-up I wasn't 100% sure I didn't put them in previous movie drafts. That was also part of it where I was like, do I have to go back and listen to all the movie drafts because I don't have my notes? I feel like I shouldn't tell you because then you might resent me more. We'll talk about it next week.
All right.
Maybe
I'll love it. Maybe I'll love it. Both of us love Forces of Nature. Keep that in mind.
Right, exactly.
We can surprise you.
This is my Forces of Nature.
Okay.
Yeah. I look forward to that. That is a bold and interesting pick. Before we get to it, though, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one of three movies with a variation of that title, was released on March 30th of 1990. What was the number one song in America?
Mariah Carey.
No.
Okay. Ice Ice Baby.
No. I will say first that I truly did not know while I'm very familiar with the song, I did not know the name of the artist until I was writing it down.
Oh. So it's not a famous artist, or it's not recognizable as that artist?
Or is it just you?
It's a one-hit wonder where I'm sure if you were more aware of music than Robin and I were in 1990, you would go, oh, that's by so-and-so. But the song has persisted. The artist has not in the consciousness.
Groove is in the Heart?
No, that's by D-Light. Can't forget. No, that's not it.
I need clues.
Yeah.
The song is by some measures the biggest. I think it was the biggest, the most radio plays, I think, of 1989 and 1990.
Possibly
because it was one of those. This is one of those that is like, I guess it's rock, but it's kind of pop, and it has enough like R&B in it that you probably could play this on any format except country radio in 1990.
Unbelievable?
No. Mid-tempo number.
What?
I will also say I thought this song was much older. I thought this was at earliest an early 80s song and could have been a 70s song.
What? I definitely am not close to knowing the answer to this.
I got nothing.
If you're going to a horror convention, everyone's wearing a t-shirt of the same color. That color is
it okay? Is it Black Velvet?
It's Black Velvet.
What? Okay, because when you said it was one of the highest radio plays, I was like, oh, it's Black Velvet. But then you said it has R&B in it, but not country, and I would have flipped that. But it's been a long time since I've listened to that song. And hang on, I'm going to see if I can pull the artist name.
Aliana.
Oh, yeah.
Alana.
Yeah, so Alana.
Alia. There's a lot of N's and an H, I think, in there. Miles?
Miller? Alana Miller?
That's as close as anyone's going to get. It's Alana Miles.
Alana Miles.
That's what I said.
Yeah. I looked up her career since then. not a lot going on. Every couple of years she tries, you know. Aww. But usually that try involves, here's yet another re-recording of Black Velvet, because we know why you're here.
It's a great song.
It's an excellent song. Wouldn't you have thought that was from, like, 1981?
No.
I don't know. I feel like I knew, I had, like, in my trivia brain that that was a huge hit in the early 90s already. Yeah. So... And when I think that's why I was aware of its placement in time.
And when I hear it, this was a definite time period when I listened to the radio. And yeah. I recall, like, every morning, like, when getting up for school, and that would be playing on the local radio station. And so, yeah. So I do have, like, actual memories of it. And I still listen to that song to this day, actually. Like, it's on a couple Spotify playlists.
Yeah.
And have caught myself singing it out loud in the liquor store when I walk by a bottle. And then I'm just in public going, Black Velvet, like in a falsetto, because how are you not going to do that?